And we thank you for being with us as we continue to roll along here on this Wednesday. Sean Grandy, the Boston Celtics play-by-play man, will be with us at 1:30. Our KHDK NBA insider, Sam Amick of USA Today, joining us at the very top of the 2 o'clock hour, also at 2:30. We'll talk about some of the unique coaching moves that the San Francisco 49ers are making. And the Falcons, I think they're looking for a scapegoat. We may have found it. Again, that's coming up at 2:30. LaMelo Ball. Youngest brother. Lonzo Ball.
Yeah.
UCLA. Scored 92 points yesterday in a CIF game. 92. Yeah. His team scored 146 points. He was 37 for 61 from the field. I think he crossed half court like a couple of times. What do you think?
There was two. Well, obviously, 92 jumps out at you.
By the way, he's going to UCLA.
Yeah, eventually, right?
Because right,
that's the youngest
point,
one, right?
Point,
I think he's only a sophomore. His older brother, who's a senior, I think is averaging 50 a game. By the way, who was hurt?
That's it.
But what was the score? It wasn't 146, like 125 or something.
123. Yep.
I just can't even imagine that amount of what's going on.
They weren't playing defense
at all. I mean, that's hard to do in any game, but certainly in a high school game where the minutes are less. I don't know. It's always a competitive game in some sense, right?
Of course.
I mean, 146 to 123. I mean, when you see someone score 92, I'm like, oh, man, did they beat him like, what, 146 to
10?
Yeah. I'm like, okay, that's not fair. But
I am watching the highlights of the game right now, and it's basically just up and down.
Just to track
me. Up and down, both teams. Just go, 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 go. There are very few missed shots, and there are a few turnovers. I just saw a block shot. Which is surprising.
That was an accident.
Defensive
that's
surprising.
Yeah.
And then that triggered the fast break the other way with a, and that's how our man gets another bucket. That's amazing. But you know what? Cheryl Miller woke up this morning and said, "That's adorable."
Yeah. 92. How many did she score again?
105.
That's right.
In 1982, 105.
And she didn't play the whole game.
No, that's right.
No, because theirs was like one of those lopsided. Like they were so much better. Yeah.
According to his father. LaMelo only had 29 at halftime, and then he went crazy. I unleashed him.
Oh, he did?
What's the father's name? LaMillionaire? What's his name? LaMental? What's his father's name?
LaVar.
Oh, LaVar. That's right.
LaMillionaire.
I like my names better.
Yeah, I do too.
Chino Hills had suffered its first loss in 61 games this past weekend to Oak Hill Academy. May sound familiar. Carmelo Anthony went there.
Ah,
Oak Hill in
Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Their opponents, Los Osos, their coach, Dave Smith, he wasn't too thrilled with what went on. That's wrong. It goes against everything CIF stands for. The Ball Boys are very talented and great players, but it's embarrassing to high school athletics. I've been coaching for 35 years, and we've turned high school athletics into individualism. It's amazing to watch a kid score that many points, but it's tough to say that's what CIF athletics is about.
But his team scored 120 some odd points too.
Yeah, he's in the
track
meet.
What's his problem?
Yeah.
I'm confused.
92 points.
I also thought it was going to be, not that seven threes is embarrassing. I thought he was going to hit like 18 threes or something.
Yeah.
Wow, seven? I mean,
nope.
Okay. That's only 21 of the points. He's got a lot of other points elsewhere.
First period, the score was 40 to 24. Don't they play like 8 minutes?
Yeah.
Picked up the pace a little bit.
But that first 8 minutes, 40 to 24. So if you basically kind of keep that pace up, you're right there.
Yeah, I guess so.
You're right there.
Crazy.
Well, I'm sure J-Ross is excited. He's off to UCLA.
For one and done.
For a season, yeah.
Steve Alford is the luckiest and the unluckiest coach ever.
Yeah, exactly. I'll go first, guys. Let's start with my three the hard way about the Patriots. Obviously, an amazing season that they've had, but they could be better, even better next year on a couple of things with two assets that they have that they could move. So I'm going to ask you about two specific guys. If you were the Patriots and you have a right deal for these said players, which one would you be more intrigued to trade? Jimmy Garoppolo or Gronk? You won without either one, technically, in the Super Bowl.
And so,
and both would fetch something.
Which one would I be what?
More willing to trade.
More willing to trade.
Yeah. Garoppolo or Gronk?
See, now that depends. on how stupid the other team is. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to give me anything of value for Jimmy Garoppolo,
and you will,
I will take that all day.
Okay.
And I will
and keep Gronk and get whatever you get back.
Exactly. Yeah. If you're foolish enough to go for the okie doke again from our backup quarterback, I'm like, yeah, man. Garoppolo's awesome. Look, he's good looking too, right?
Yeah.
You know, you like that, huh? That'd be a great face of your franchise. A first round pick, please.
A couple.
Yeah. Yeah. If I don't have to trade Gronk, I'm not gonna.
I'm with him.
Yeah.
You trade Jimmy Garoppolo. You probably will have a number of suitors that are going to be bidding against each other. Whoever, you know, the combine is coming up. All of these workouts are coming up. All these individual workouts are going to come up. And someone is going to just fall madly in love with the quarterback who shouldn't be drafted at 1, 2, or 3 or somewhere up there. Or they're not. And it could be like a year where we see quarterbacks go, there's like 6 that went in the first round, even though no one was like ranked above, you know, we didn't even have 6 ranked in the top 50. They all went in the first round. Okay, or it could be, yeah, no quarterbacks went in the first round. And then you have the Jets and the Bears and the 49ers, the Texans maybe. I don't know. You have a number of teams who are going out there looking and like, you know, that kid in New England, let's go get him.
Yeah.
I don't think you get rid of Gronk.
I would say it's clean sweep for me as well. I would say Garoppolo. The only reason I would watch Gronk would be the back, because I think even if Garoppolo doesn't play it down for 3 years behind Brady, there'll always be a market for him. If Gronk is damaged goods, there may not be at some point. I don't think he's there, but watch that. That would be the only reason I'd say Gronk.
All right.
But back's heel.
Yes.
Established that. Totally fine. Back's heel. Louie, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think that I would trade Garoppolo because for some reason, some teams have drinking the Kool-Aid and they may give up a first rounder for him. And if that's the case, you got to go with that to the Patriots, because they're going to need to draft a quarterback to groom him if Brady wants to play a couple more years. And that way, there's no drop-off. Well, there's going to be a drop-off in quarterback, but not. We're not going to go severe drop-off from Brady to Manziel if you go that route.
Yeah, I get you. Manziel, what are you going to do with Manziel?
We ain't getting Manziel. I'm just saying, you get somebody like him if you don't prepare now. Hey, man, plan for the future.
I get it. Now
all
I see
right.
it. Now
I appreciate you, Louie, man.
Now I see it, yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate you, Louie. Let's hit the next one. I just heard Manziel and immediately froze. I was like, what is he suggesting?
There's a dog whistle. We both were like,
wait, what? Is he still around? Didn't he have an autograph signing that day?
He's got a reality show coming up next. You know he will.
He's got to.
Right?
How has no one jumped on that, by the way? Do we need to start the lowdown productions to get this thing started?
These great ideas, and it's just, you know, there's really no other outlet to hold them all. We're just going to have to start our own thing, guys. Just do it.
Yeah.
Done. All right.
Follow Johnny Manziel to autograph signings.
Okay, here we go. A lot of new coaches. A lot of new coaches in sports, especially in football. So we have Vance Joseph, Anthony Lynn, Doug Marrone, Kyle Shanahan's a new head coach, Sean McVay, and who's in Buffalo? That's the guy I can never remember. But anyway, there's a coach in Buffalo.
That's McVay, right?
No, McVay's not in Los Angeles.
That's, I just blanked on
And you left out Anthony. Did you leave out Anthony?
No, I said Anthony.
Oh, okay.
He's
Doug Marrone.
Marrone's Jacksonville.
Doug Marrone is
Dutch Schneiderville or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know. McDermott. Yeah. McDermott.
Then. I like
Schneiderville.
Dutch
what did you call
I don't know.
Dutch Schneiderville.
Dutch Schneiderville. This is what I looked at. I got his face in my mind. And I was
Buffalo
like,
calling
Dutch
next
Schneiderville.
Year.
Dutch Schneiderville. Was that the guy from One Day at a Time?
Schneider.
Are we sure his full name wasn't Dutch Schneiderville?
If it was, I would have called him that
all the
time.
That would have been awesome.
Name.
I just came up with that off the top. That's how smart we are.
That's the greatest name ever.
But anywho, Dutch
Schneiderville.
So those six new head coaches, right? You can even throw in Coach Dave Yeager. You can even throw in the new coach at Oregon. I believe it was Willie Taggart.
He's off to a bad start. Let's just disqualify Willie Taggart for now.
New coaches do you predict will be the most successful?
Dutch Schneiderville.
But by the way, if you didn't know and I told you that a dude named Willie Taggart was black, would you believe it? That doesn't.
What?
Willie Taggart? That sounds like a country music star. That is someone I would think that would air on KNC. Like, coming to the Golden One Center this Sunday, Willie Taggart with Brad Paisley.
That's a good point. There are only two things it could be. He has to be black or a country artist.
Black guy?
With a name like Willie.
Willie Taggart.
Taggart was the guy in Beverly Hills Cop.
That's right. Right. Yeah. That's right.
Taggart, that's right.
But we'll leave Coach Taggart in.
Yeah,
Oregon,
they're off to a really bad start in Oregon.
Yeah, it's not that good. Let's focus with our six new NFL coaches. We'll focus on those guys.
Vance Joseph has it set up pretty nice for him, for himself. What do you think?
I think he's going to do a good job in L.A., Anthony Lynn. I really do. I think he's going to do a good job. And then I did spread one out of besides NFL. I don't even know why I'm saying this. I really think Lane Kiffin's going to do well. I really do.
How do you measure, though?
Yeah, I was going to say, based on what?
Of where they are and what meaning well, you know, like as a bowl team. I mean, they're not.
Florida Atlantic, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I do. I'm curious. I don't necessarily
that season,
even
it was
root
that,
for him. But
it was that commercial that got you.
It was riveting. It was a clever ploy.
Mm-hmm.
Undersell it, and he did.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, but Anthony Lynn would be my NFL answer.
Did you hear his interview recently with Rome?
Anthony Lynn?
Yeah.
No, I did not.
That's kind of where I got a lot of it from, too, because I heard him have a nice long talk with Rome last week, and I was like, wow, all this stuff I didn't know about this guy. And just the way that he commanded himself, just the way he was talking, I'm like, okay, I can see guys following him.
It seems like he was really sought out that
early on.
Final few weeks of the season.
Yeah.
The final few when Buffalo made the move to get rid of Rex Ryan, and then I obviously had that horrible Week 17 outing, and I wonder if teams looked at it like, oh.
Yikes. But he somehow redeemed himself, and he seems pretty strong. Going to be able to lead that team in this difficult transition for the Chargers.
Absolutely. We've alluded to the situation with Phil Jackson and Carmelo Anthony, the shot Phil Jackson took on Twitter. We'll discuss that next. Plus, Sean Grandy, the Boston Celtics play-by-play man, joins us at 1:30 here on the 118. And Sierra Pacific Heating reminds you to stay warm even without football season. Call 800-551-3040 for all your home heating needs with Sierra Pacific. Thank you for joining us here on the Lowdown. Sean Grandy, play-by-play man for the Boston Celtics, going to be with us here at 1:30. Sam Amick, our KHDK NBA insider of USA Today and host of the A to Z podcast, will be with us at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. Interested to get Sam's take and Sean's really on the situation in New York as well. We talked in great deal. Really, we were talking about the Kings, but made kind of a relation to what's going on in New York with Phil Jackson, Carmelo Anthony, and Phil took a shot at Carmelo on Twitter last night. Now, I want to go back to something we were talking about yesterday. Frank Isola's article that came out during the Wizards-Cavs game and LeBron's response to it said, when you go and you read that article, knowing Frank and how long he's been there in New York and how much he's covered the Knicks, and you just read and you look at the verbiage of that article, you realize there's a strong possibility that Phil Jackson is his source for that article. And then this Bleacher Report article comes out last night. And Phil tweets about the article. And you're looking at that. You read the article again. You see the same verbiage you saw in Frank Isola's. And it's like, dude, you're the one talking to the media. It's so clear. And now you're hyping this Bleacher Report guy up on social media and throwing a shot at Carmelo Anthony, talking about the line I used earlier, a leopard doesn't change his spots. If you're a player, why would you want to play for Phil Jackson ever, regardless of how this situation ends with Carmelo Anthony? I think there's two things at play here. And we'll ask Sam Amick about this at 2 o'clock. Phil is either desperately trying to get rid of Carmelo Anthony or he's desperately trying to get himself fired. Neither one of those would surprise me. I'm leaning towards he's trying to get himself fired. He doesn't want this job. I don't think he ever wanted this job. I think he took it because they threw a ton of money at him.
Yeah, I think when you ask who would want to play, I would be more intrigued to play for him if he was a coach, not as a GM. Those games or the little things he does, whether you're trying to figure him out or not, I don't think play as well as a GM. As a coach, it's a version of motivation.
Absolutely.
I don't think that needs to happen from the GM.
Because I don't know if it would seem like a player is like a coach. Okay, you're messing with my playing time, maybe. Mm-hmm. And maybe in some roundabout way that affects my money. But the GM affects my money directly.
That's an issue.
Yes. And so, yeah, you can't have that guy playing games who affecting your livelihood and your money. I think that maybe it's the opposite, Damian. It's kind of the same, but the opposite. Meaning, I don't think he's trying to get them to fire him. I think he's trying to get Carmelo to be like, you know what? Get me out of here. I'll waive the no trade clause. I don't care where you send me. Just get me out of here. I think he's trying to push in that direction because in this scenario, Carmelo has all the power. Because if he didn't, they would have done something already.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a disciplinary situation like our caller Ken was talking about where you just dole out the punishment and you don't care.
Playing.
This is different. So I think that they're trying to kind of force his hand to where he's so unhappy. He'll say, I'll waive my no trade clause, and you just do whatever you got to do. Just find the best deal, but get me out.
I don't think Melo's that stupid.
How's that stupid?
Because that's him caving. That's Carmelo. Oh, just send me wherever you want. Carmelo has all of the power right now. All of it. That's why you have the no trade clause. That's why only a handful of guys in the league have a no trade clause. He has all of the power.
And
there's no
reason.
There's absolutely no reason for him to go, oh, I'm so. No, because ultimately, you guys can't send me anywhere that I don't agree to. But your ass can be fired. You can't fire me. And if you do, that's even better for me because then I choose where I go and you still pay me. You can't fire me, but your ass is going to be fired. So I'll ride it out. I love New York. My wife loves New York. I'm cool.
What about expanding his or reducing the no trade clause? Meaning he probably has teams. He's like, yeah, I'm okay with that. But he obviously can't be happy there. And having the power means exerting the power or knowing when to get out of the way.
Well,
and in this situation, the power is I can go where I want to go. So say, oh, you know what? I'll give you these six teams. You work out a deal with one of those six teams, and I'm out. That's still him controlling it.
Sure, it is. But if the list that he really has, Jason, is only two teams.
That's what I'm saying.
Or three.
I said he has to reduce the no-trade clause and expand the list.
But so it all comes down to how bad does Carmelo really want out of New York?
And how badly do they want him out? In a sense where maybe it's if they're showing the desperation to want him out, kind of like you talked yesterday, let's wait till February 22nd and see what that trade with the Clippers looks like or the trade with the Cavs looks like compared to what it's looking like today.
Yeah, and again, go back to what we said yesterday about Vlade coming out and saying we're not trading DeMarcus. If you're interested in Carmelo Anthony, you're not talking right now because you see what's going on in New York. It is off the rails in New York right now. You're not calling right now. You're going to call the 22nd or the 23rd. You're going to call. I guarantee you Doc Rivers is going to call Danny Ainge before he calls Phil Jackson. Hey, where are you at with Carmelo? Are you looking at them? He's going to call David Griffin. What have you heard about Carmelo? Are you guys working something out? They're going to talk amongst themselves before they ever talk.
I'm serious. Like GMs do that?
Absolutely.
They talk about what their plans are with another team?
They may not necessarily talk about what plans they have.
But they will allude.
But they'll get. Exactly.
What was that, Jason?
They're fishing.
The fish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. See what you'll tell me. I mean, how much will you tell me? And guys will be smart enough to tell you enough of what you need to know.
See, I see it.
And Doc would tell Danny Ainge something.
Right.
I mean, there's like when you look at exactly when you look, David Griffin might not tell Danny Ainge anything because of the implications that, oh, man, do whatever you want with Carmelo.
I'm sure what you're saying is right. But I feel like if I had an offer, if I had something I thought that they want, I would swoop in right now because it's chaos. And if you come in the middle of chaos with something that makes sense, you're going to stand out.
But,
and they're going to be like, oh, there it is, the life raft we've been looking for because it's chaotic. And here you come with a deal.
Sure, but what if whatever deal you have proposed for the Knicks, you can get that. Let's say you have three players. You're going to send three players, two starters to the Knicks for Carmelo Anthony, when in a week you could probably send them it for one starter the other guy.
True, but in a week everybody's doing that. Why don't I get a jump? It's chaotic right now.
But it doesn't matter because Carmelo's not going to agree to go to everybody else. You're competing right now with a very small handful of teams. Sacramento, Minnesota, Dallas, they can put together whatever they want. Doesn't matter. Cleveland matters. Los Angeles matters. Boston might. I don't think it does, but it might. We'll come back. Speaking of Boston, the Boston Celtics play-by-play man, Sean Grandy, joins us next here on The Lowdown. Awesome call there from Sean Grandy in the Celtics radio network from Paul Pierce's final game in Boston this past week. And the Boston Celtics are here tonight at the Golden One Center. And Sean Grandy, the Celtics play-by-play man, is with us now here on the Lowdown. Sean, 2 years of WrestleMania tickets and a box of Roman Reigns t-shirts if you leave Isaiah Thomas here.
Is a Roman Reigns t-shirt a prize?
Absolutely. Oh, Roman, okay, we'll make a combination. Roman Reigns and John Cena t-shirts.
The irony And I was just thinking, I just had this thought, and just get, I had two thoughts when I get to Sacramento. The first, given everything that's going on today, wouldn't it have been fun if Phil Jackson had a Twitter account back in the, you know, back in the days when he used to come here every May? Then it really would have been something. But the last time we got to Sacramento, Isaiah Thomas was not a member. Isaiah Thomas was traded to the Celtics when we were last here in Sacramento, because the game last year, as you guys may remember, was in Mexico City. So the Celtics haven't been here in 2 years. It's literally the entire franchise has, and most of the roster has turned over since the last time we were paid visit to your fair city.
So that's a no. You're not going to leave him. So,
okay, 3 years of WrestleMania tickets. Just leave him here.
We got to up the offer. What do you mean?
I don't get. Listen, I don't. They're no good to me. I've been in the league. This is my 19th year in the league. I don't get to go to WrestleMania. I think 1 year we were in Chicago. The year, I don't know, 2006. I'm not sure. We were like in the city the day of, and then flew to the next city. But you know, offering someone in the NBA WrestleMania tickets. You want to talk about SummerSlam? I mean,
let me work on the offer, and we'll get it going.
So, how about Isaiah? Though he was good here. He was okay in Phoenix, but something now, Sean, has clicked. Obviously, in Boston, where he's turned into an MVP type candidate. What have you seen as his game has grown?
Well, first of all, don't you just love that none of us knew what we were talking about, or that there was no, you know, that nobody said there's that things can still happen that we didn't see coming, is just a beautiful part of sports. That a guy that has just been, you know, we thought Isaiah could be good. He was put almost immediately here into a position to be the guy, because there wasn't a guy, there wasn't a go-to offensive guy in the Celtics when he got here in 2015. But to watch him grow into that role has been pretty spectacular. To watch him do what he does when everybody knows he's going to do it. The last 5-6 weeks and all of these games at home the Celtics have had, and these fourth quarters, it has become less of an NBA game than it is. It's a Broadway show now. Everyone knows what's going to happen. They just want to see it live. They just want to see Isaiah have these fourth quarters. I think there is an element in the NBA when your athleticism and your knowledge, there's a curve. You know, your basketball IQ and your knowledge and your way to play in the NBA and your go-to moves and the things that you do that make you the NBA player you are, though that curve goes up as your athleticism goes down as you get older. But there's that sweet spot, boy, in your mid-late 20s when those two things start to – and Isaiah is just hitting that spot where here's a guy, he's an offensive savant, and now he has figured out how he can score in the NBA, possession after possession. He's making the right plays most of these times, even in the fourth quarter. It's not like he's taking 20 shots to get these 13 points a game that he's getting in the fourth over the last few weeks. So he has figured it out. He has a team that's built around him. There's an element of the 2001 Sixers that had the perfect guys around Iverson. I don't like to talk about Iverson much anymore, because even though I used that as a comparison for a while, Iverson never did the things that Isaiah's done the last 5, 6, 7 weeks.
Sean, you mentioned, you know, a player reaching kind of a sweet spot, and it kind of looks like this team is really kind of getting toward a sweet spot. You have a lot of good things in place, but most importantly, you guys have a lot of picks. You have a lot of movement you can make. Is this team still going to be active in making some moves, or do you think that they're set with what they have?
I would say willing. You know, active depends on who's on the other end of the phone and who are the players that truly become available when, you know, in another couple of weeks. And it has become, I think Celtic fans are almost at the point where they've been expecting something big for so long, for the 3 or 4 years, that they're almost willing to kind of put their faith now in this team that, for, as soon as everything happened in 2013, and Doc Rivers left, and Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce go, Celtic fans had no patience, as nobody does on the East Coast, so they wanted it right away. All right, what's the next Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen trade? And at the time, you know, Rondo was the only, you know, name player, the star player, and obviously we know how that turned out, left. But, you know, how do you get Kevin Love? How do you get Carmelo Anthony? How do you get Boogie Cousins? How do you get Jimmy Butler? How do you get these guys? And, well, I think Celtic fans still, you know, want to be that elite team and realize Boston right now is on that second tier. Here's the danger. 2 years ago, when we got to Sacramento, the Celtics were still, had been a year and a half under Brad Stevens. They were the 25th best team in the league. They were 41-87. That was Brad Stevens' start in 128 games in a year and a half. 41-87. When you're 25th in the league, you can roll the dice. When you are the fifth or sixth best team in the league, as the Celtics have been now for 2 full years, somebody had a great thing, and it was actually a tweet that I got, and I told the guy when he tweeted, I messaged him right back. I said, I'm stealing this in every interview I've done. It's the Celtics are like Jenga right now. where one piece, you need to make a move, but if you do it wrong, you can go back to, you know, now all of a sudden you're looking at a long way to fall from fifth or sixth best team in the league. So there's a big danger in giving up, you know, if to add a Jimmy Butler, to add a star, you know, a superstar player, are you giving up a Jay Crowder? Are you giving up an Avery Bradley? Are you giving up a core player that's part of this, you know, sort of this renaissance for Boston?
Boston Celtics radio play-by-play man Sean Grandy with us here on the Lowdown. Sean, the Celtics right now 33-18, but it really took you guys a while to get going. What clicked? Because we were watching you at the beginning of the season, like, it's not there. We don't see that magic. And then suddenly, I think even Isaiah said, yeah, we're not ready. We're not a playoff team or something along those lines. And then suddenly, you guys just started winning games.
I would almost go a little bit the other way and say the record. Last year, I'll give you an example. I'm a big fan of scoring differential, of scoring margin as a true indication of how well a team is playing over a long period of time. And last year, the Celtics have 18 losses now. Last year, they lost their 19th game on January 12th, something like that. So, you know, almost a month earlier, they already had 19 losses. They lost a game in New York to drop to 19-19, but their scoring margin was +3, which is, that's really good. That's top 10 in the league, maybe better than that. And it was an indication they'd lost a lot of close games. This year, the Celtics come into the game tonight 33-18, fifth best record in the NBA. Their scoring margin isn't as good as it was when they were 19-19 last year, which is an indication that they're getting by. They're winning close games they didn't last year because you got Isaiah having these fourth quarters. You have some veteran guys making some plays. Isaiah's getting to the free throw line a lot. So I would suggest that the Celtics' record this year is a little better, particularly in this last run, which they went from 13-12 to, you know, they're 20-6 in the last 26 games, which is obviously an elite record, and this is a really good team. But I'm not sure we've seen yet how good they can be because the Celtics in 51 games have only had, I think, 21 where they've had everybody. Between Horford being out early in the year, Jay Crowder was hurt early in the year, Avery Bradley not going to be on this trip, is going to go maybe 4 or 5 weeks without playing, and that's a long time. So I don't think we really know yet how good this team can be. If something has clicked, it's that they've got, you know, they have a go-to guy now in Isaiah in the fourth quarter. I think Al Horford's numbers are not – there's a mini Garnett element in that his numbers were going to come down coming to Boston, but he's doing a lot of things to help you win. I think the step forward that Jay Crowder has made continues to go overlooked, and I believe for, you know, years – this could be a 30-for-30 if you go back for the Celtics 2 years ago and say, what if I told you the Celtics would trade Rajon Rondo for Jay Crowder and get the better of the deal by far? That was inconceivable when the deal happened. And look at, you know, the player that Jay Crowder has become. So it's a really good team. I'm not ready to say, as good as the record has been, I'm not ready to say they've completely clicked or we know yet how good they can be.
Wow. Sean, hang tight 1 second. We're going to give away these Kings tickets here.
All right, Sean, you were talking about not knowing the entirety of what the – how good this team is, but if you guys literally are chasing Cleveland without a move, let's say you guys don't make any moves, can you beat the Cavs in a series?
No, I don't think, no. And certainly not. Listen, there's always what you do is you put yourself in position to be in position, and maybe LeBron slips on a banana peel at some point, and there's something unthinkable. I've never been, again, 19 years of doing this, I've never entered a season in which it seemed such a foregone conclusion what the NBA Finals was going to be. And it has also been my experience that whenever we are completely convinced that something is absolutely going to happen, that's when it doesn't. I mean, the Celtics and Lakers, and you know, they should have had the trilogy. Everyone remembers 2008 and obviously 2010, which went 7 games. 2009 was probably those two teams at their peak, and then Kevin Garnett gets hurt late in the year, and the Celtics weren't. You know, the Celtics were matching their 08 season. And probably would have been better in the playoffs, which we learned a year later. But one injury can change every single thing. So I think the Celtics are certainly in position. I'm not sure yet. I'm not ready to go out on a limb and say the Celtics are going to beat Toronto in a 7-game series. The Raptors have had a crazy, you know, bizarre roller coaster year. They were step for step with Golden State for, you know, a lot of November and into December, and then they've just pretty much gone south since then. DeRozan's been hurt, but there's a lot of experience, and there's been a couple of Celtics beat them without DeRozan a couple of weeks ago, but there have been a couple of big brother little brother games yet where the Raptors aren't really ready yet to surrender the the division number two spot yet. So I think, you know, a lot of people are kind of hoping for a Boston-Toronto series in that, you know, East kind of semifinal sort of thing to see who is Cleveland's challenger. And then here comes Washington out of nowhere. So there's, you know, there's some fun stuff, you know, happening in the East.
Sean, there are so many interesting little elements to this team. And one of them kind of goes back to what we started our conversation talking about, Isaiah Thomas and his amazing exploits in the fourth quarter. But I ask you two things. What do you make of the stat that the team is still being outscored in the fourth quarter when he's doing that? And and how is that affecting the chemistry of the players?
Only you would be so you know, that's like this Keen analysis. And it's not my place. Listen, I struggle sometimes in Boston because I'm sort of the anti-homer. You know, we are in the shadow of, you know, Mike Gorman and Tommy Heinsohn on the TV side. We have such a, you know, Cedric Maxwell and I have such a contrast to them because they are old school, carry on the Johnny Most tradition of, you know, homerism, which I think has, you can make the case wherever you stand on play-by-play that there should, you know, you should be a homer or you shouldn't be a homer. It's something I've never been able to do. But I do these interviews and I don't bring it. If somebody brings it up, okay. But here's the dirty little secret of the fourth quarters. Isaiah may be getting 13, but he's given up 12. And the Celtics aren't extending, you know, all these dramatic games that have made SportsCenter and whatever. The Celtics have led by three going into the fourth, and they win by two. So they've been amazing to watch. But defensively, there is a run. The Celtics have kind of, during the seven-game win streak, have been much better on the defensive end. But and this is an amazing number in the NBA. The Celtics went through a run from right around mid-December until this last winning streak, in which they were fourth from the bottom, in the 27th in defensive rating. I don't want to get too wonky with the numbers, but basically how many points you're giving up per possession. 27th out of 30 in anything is horrendous. So defensively, they were just brutal in this stretch. They were 11-7 in those 18 games, in which they were one of the worst defensive teams in the league, which tells you just how good the offense was, just how good Isaiah was. And In the old school, this is where you have to change your thinking about what you're seeing in front of you. All of us would say, you can't win like that. You can't win championships. You can't win whatever. But, you know, the teams that are winning now are the offensive teams, so maybe you can. When Golden State won 2 years ago, everyone's like, oh, you can't win that way. You can't. They were the number one defensive team in the league, too. So, you know, it's still obviously of critical importance, and it's why I don't think the roster is exactly where you need it to be. The Celtics are not going to be a good rebounding team, no matter what, because of the roster they have and the way they play. But defensively, once they tighten things up, as they did these last few games, that's what this latest win streak has been about. But, yeah, that's exactly right. Celtics defensively, it's been a great show to watch. But you're talking about Isaiah as an MVP candidate, and he is. And the reason is because if in a year in which James Harden is the presumptive favorite right now, I think it's safe to say that defense no longer is really applies to MVP.
Sean Grandy, the Celtics play-by-play man, with us here on the Lowdown. So you just listed rebounding and you just listed defense as things the Celtics need. So I assume Danny Ainge has absolutely zero interest in Carmelo Anthony.
You know what's interesting about Carmelo? I don't think that it could happen in Boston. And you have the salary, you have the contract. I sometimes phrase it this way. Let's put aside, let's have a fantasy world for a second. Let's put aside salary and let's put aside having to match it and a trade that you could put together for Carmelo. Where does Carmelo fit on the Boston Celtics? And going back to what something I've been saying, people think in defense and think in rebounding. 2 years ago, Isaiah Thomas gets here, and the Celtics overachieve because they have a go-to guy to score in the second unit. Last year, the Celtics won more games than they probably should have. Why? They had a go-to guy who could score on the second unit in Evan Turner. That's what the Celtics don't have this year. They have Marcus Smart as their best player on the second unit and their sixth man. And defensively and every intangible you could have, Marcus Smart, I guarantee you guys, tonight he will make a play at some point. He will come up with a loose ball. He will come up with a rebound. He will come up with a steal because he does it every night. He's the kind of player you absolutely love on your team. But he's not a go-to, I need a bucket and I need a run stopper in the in that second unit when you're on the road late in the third, early in the fourth. Carmelo Anthony would almost be perfect for the Celtics roster in that capacity, and also would give Boston this option to go with a killer lineup of Carmelo at the four, Horford at the five, Jay Crowder at the three, and the things you could do were amazing. If Carmelo Anthony was in the same spot that Stephon Marbury was in in 2009 where Marbury was untradeable and you couldn't touch him. Then he got released and bought out, and everybody was lining up. And he ended up on the Celtics, and he was a perfect, you know, he was an addition. He helped them win a playoff game, you know, against Orlando in the second round. So Carmelo Anthony is the perfect, a perfect addition to the Boston roster, but you can't. There's no way to make a deal. There's no way to match the salaries, and obviously the Celtics could be a facilitator if the Clippers or somebody else were interested. But I'm a there's generally a negative feeling towards Carmelo in Boston and in a lot of places around the league. I'm, as a lifelong holder of minority opinion, that's sort of another one I have. I kind of like Carmelo, and I think in the right spot, in, on somebody's second unit or as a not the guy. I kind of always wish he had gone to Chicago a couple of years ago when he had the chance to do that, you know, and play on that team, because it would have been interesting to see, because he's always been great on the national team. But it's hard for me to see a team putting together the assets to make a deal as obviously willing as Phil Jackson is to move on from it.
Sean, whether we're talking about Carmelo going there, DeMarcus going there, Butler going there, Kevin Love, whoever it is, everybody seems to be talking about the Brooklyn picks that Danny Ainge has, that you guys have. What does Danny Ainge think of those picks? Because he could keep those and still boost the team.
I think he's fine doing it. It's all assets. Assets are great until if at some point you have to make an evaluation of them and say, all right, well, this is more valuable than a player I could get back for them. I think, I'm not saying that the number one pick in the draft this year, the Nets pick next year, is untradeable, but it pretty much is. I mean, you're staring at, there's virtually, the Nets have to play 500 the rest of the way to not have the worst. There is a 7-game gap right now with 30 to play between the Nets and the 29th team in the NBA, which is Phoenix. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And keep in mind, in this league in which we know we don't talk about it out loud much, but we know there is a certain game that teams are going to play in the second half of the year if they don't necessarily have motivation to win games and they want to be in that lottery. The Brooklyn Nets have zero motivation to lose games. Zero. And they are 7 games behind the second worst team in the NBA. That boggles my mind. So, is that pick untradeable? I mean, nothing's untradeable, but you're staring at almost a guaranteed top 3 pick and maybe the top pick in the draft. And just what the Celtics need is a guard heavy top 2 or 3. And, suddenly the Celtics roster, guys can't get in games. You know, James Young could probably play somewhere, but there's no, how's he going to get ahead of Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart and Isaiah Thomas and now Terry Rozier? And Jaylen Brown has been in the rotation from the beginning of the year as a 20-year-old. So, It's a tough spot.
Hey, Sean, for us doing this job, we all probably started out loving sports, and there's no cheering in the press box. We understand that. But I have to tell you, I grew up a Laker fan, and you work with the one man that I hated more than any other Celtic on the planet. That dude used to work the boards like crazy. But I wonder, do you have an all-time favorite Celtic or an all-time player that you just absolutely hated?
Yeah, I hated the Celtics. I grew up a Knicks fan. I'm from New York. Like most of the Celtics have a broadcast history of, well, first of all, the Celtics history, we're talking about Red Auerbach, Johnny Most, the two big ones at the top in terms of broadcast and running the franchise, and then later on guys like Howard David and Spencer Ross, who were broadcast, all New Yorkers. It's a long New York history. I remember talking to Red about, I'm sort of the last Celtic announcer who ever got the I remember meeting Red on a flight back to D.C., and I got called back to the plane. It was like seeing, Tony Soprano in the back room and kind of getting the talking to and the get-to-know-you thing and just having like a 15-20-minute conversation and sort of getting the papal blessing from Red. And it kind of occurred to me years later that I'll be the last one, obviously, to ever get that. But yeah, I hated the Celtics. I hated them growing up. I was a Knicks fan. When Larry won the MVP in 84 instead of my guy, Bernard King, I was devastated, as any 12-year-old would be, by that development. But it's funny to see Max. I work with, doing MMA now. I work with a guy named Jimmy Smith, who's my analyst on Spike, doing Bellator, and he's a huge Laker fan. So I have to deal with this all the time. I'm constantly dealing with the Celtic Laker thing, and it puts me in this, unusual spot as this, defending the longtime history of the Celtics one. That wasn't uh, That wasn't me, but I said Max still brings out. You know, the Laker thing is real. Max will be prominently featured in the 30 for 30 coming out this summer. They interviewed him a couple of months ago for that, and it's still real. I mean, I remember sitting next to him in Game 7. And Max is, you know, is very much too cool for school and a lot of elements and whatever, but he's still affected by the, you know, by the Celtic Laker thing. He's, I think, in the Bird Magic HBO documentary, his line is, you know, if I saw any of those guys on the side of the road on fire and I had a glass of water, I would drink the water. that's how these guys feel about it. And he was there. I remember Magic being around us in 2010 during game seven. He was, you know, he was at Staples Center. He was sort of around, and it was. And I remember after the game, and he was sort of celebrating and kind of coming up afterwards. And Max was not, you know, like he's a broadcaster and whatever, but he was still the Celtic Laker thing runs, you know, very deep to this day. It's like you think they have. You know, like these old Civil War things where they'd eventually kind of get together and all shake hands and whatever, but doesn't always happen that way. I had an interesting moment in the media room at the Garden a couple of weeks ago when Kevin McHale came in for TNT to do the game, and I was having dinner with Rick Mahorn, and Kevin McHale comes over, and it was just to watch the two of them just sort of talking, and it was like living a 30 for 30,
right.
Like being in a three-dimensional, you know, conversation that was existing in front of you.
Just stand up and back away, Sean.
Yes,
just
right.
Back away slowly, get out of the way, move all tables and chairs.
But you have to love that. I think that, you know, I love the history, and I think it, you know, I love that guys keep it alive.
Sean, thank you for being so generous with your time. We'll see you tonight at the Golden One Center.
Looking forward to it.
Right, that's Sean Grandy, the Boston Celtics play-by-play man. I'm going to tell you this. You're not going to get a better hour of basketball than you're about to get. We just wrapped up with Sean Grandy, and we're going straight into our KHDK NBA Insider. Sam Amick joins us in 4 minutes here on the Lowdown.